I mean, come on. How many of you were blessed last week by Mother's Day here at Crossroads? Come on. We had lots and lots of ladies and lots of people come through the building last week. It was a powerful time. And y'all got charcuterie dessert boxes. And it was great because you dessert it. Okay. I think it literally said it on the box. But you're like, I didn't see the boxes. I got straight to the goodies. Yeah, I did too, because my wife gave me a box of goodies. Father's Day is coming. All right. Also, I do want to say this. Just take a second. Man, I know that lots of people are going to the race next week, and that's great. And I know that like 500,000 people will be out there. That's super awesome. But I do know that our students would love to see you here at Student Sunday next weekend. And I promise you, if you're like weighing the two, Student Sunday, Indy 500, there's going to be many more Indy 500s, all right? There will still be many more Student Sundays, but I don't know if there'll be many more opportunities for you to hear Jeannie Mayo come and drop a fire word. And I'll tell you, I know some of you probably don't know who that is, but Ashley talked about her a little bit last week. If there are only a handful of people on this planet that we could probably give credit and contribute to the fact that we're still doing full-time ministry, Ashley and I. And she is one of those people, because in some very dark times that we walked through, she walked alongside of us and never doubted. She believed in us, and she's always been there for us. And so I would love, if nothing else, I would love for you just to come to hear her, because it will be a treat. It will be awesome. So please, please come. We would love to have you here. If you go to the race, we'll pray that you don't get sunburnt. But you won't get sunburnt in here. I'm just saying. Okay, all right. Anyway. Hey, today, we are all here today, and it's going to be a beautiful time together. And I armed you. You're right, Ashley. I armed you all with rocks. So they'll make sense. I promise it'll make sense by the time we're done this morning. Because we're going to talk about a story. We're going to peel back a little bit of the story in the Bible. It's a true story. It really did happen, all right? Coming out of the Old Testament, it's a story that probably many of you know. If you grew up in church, even just like you just started going to church, you probably knew about this story from a very young age. And if you don't know about it, you're here this morning, you're watching online, you're like, I still don't know who you're talking about. That's okay. That's why we're here. We learn about these things together. But the story comes out of 1 Samuel chapter 17, and the story is David and Goliath. David and Goliath. I know. Some of you are like, I love David and Goliath. I do too. You know, we're going to take a look at some of the important people, like Saul, David, Goliath. He's a big guy. It's hard to miss him. We're going to take a look at all those people, but we're also going to take a look at probably the thing that had the largest impact in the story. Did you get it? First service didn't either. It's the thing that has the largest impact in the story. Okay, the rock. We're going to talk about the rock. That's right. Before we do that, I want to set the stage before we get into chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. I want to set the stage to let you know, give you some context about what we're looking at this morning. See, the Israelites and the Philistines, they had been waging war for years, like always at each other, fighting back and forth. And actually, two chapters before where we're going to read out of today in 1 Samuel 15, we see that King Saul, who was the king of the Israelites, he was told that he needed to wage war against a people group called the Amalekites. And not only just wage war, but utterly destroy them. Like nothing left of the Amalekites. Wipe them out. But Saul had a different idea. And so what he did was he let the best cattle, the best sheep, the best goats live. And he also, he was told not to do this, but he also let King Agag, the king of the Amalekites, live. He was told to end his life as well. But he was disobedient, and so the prophet Samuel came to visit Saul. It's like when dad shows up and you know you're in trouble, like, you know, like start making excuses, like, it was great, but you know dad's not happy. And And that's what Samuel was. He came in and Saul knew he was in trouble. And what Samuel said to Saul was that, hey, because of your disobedience, God is going to lay over you a tormenting spirit. Now, in that day and age, it was tormenting spirit, but we probably could identify that coming out looking a lot like crippling depression, fear that just strickens you, and then anxiety, a heavy amount of anxiety. Like, he couldn't function. He couldn't function. The second thing that Samuel told King Saul was that because of his disobedience, that God had removed the bloodline of the kingship from Saul's family and had placed it somewhere else. Ironically, kind of at the same time, a young man by the name of David was introduced to Saul. And when Saul would have these bouts of anger, depression, and anxiety, the only thing that calmed Saul down was when David played music for King Saul. And it calmed him down. Ironic, because without Saul knowing, David was actually the one that was anointed the next king of Israel, and the bloodline of the kings would run through David's house. It's crazy, but that's setting the stage. So all of that set, all right? So word is spread throughout the land that Saul is having problems. And so that makes the Philistines feel like, hey, we can take our shot now. We can take our shot. Let's get him while he's down. And so they then come out to face the Israelites. And we're going to pick up in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 1. And it says this: the Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Soko and Judah and Azekah at Ephesus Demim. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Allah. So the Philistines and Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and as thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across to the Israelites. Why are you all coming out to fight? He said. I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will all be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today, so send a man who will fight me. When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. And then we skip to 16, verse 16. For 40 days, the soldiers stand, for 40 days, could you go back to that? Think, yeah, there it is. For 40 days, every morning and evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. Now, there's just a couple things that I think are super important that you know about this. In ancient times, this was actually a normal thing that would happen. Instead of just having bloodbaths on both sides and losing an immense amount of human lives, what they would do a lot of times is send the champion from one side out, the best warrior from one side, to face the other best warrior from the other side. And then they would fight. And then whoever won that battle would win the battle in totality. And that was how they did. The thing that wasn't normal, though, was that the Israelites did not want to send anybody out. Nobody wanted to go out and face Goliath, all right? There's always usually one hothead guy and a bunch of dudes, right? But there was none this time. They weren't idiots. They saw that guy, and they're like, no, thank you, all right? No, thank you. I don't think so, right? And so nobody came out to face Goliath. Also, notice how the author of this passage describes Saul. You would think Saul being the king, right, he would be out leading his troops. But actually, Saul was responding the same way as his troops. They were both terrified and afraid. Saul hid in his tent, kind of blending in the same kind of response as the men that he was supposed to be leading. And then the other note that's super important that we get from this little chunk right here, numbers are very important in the Bible. That's why we read verse 16. Because when you look at the number 40 and you put it to any period of time in the Bible, a lot of times the number 40, 40 days, 40 years, like it represents a trial that God has been given someone. And so Saul has been given a trial of 40 days facing this Goliath and the Philistine armies. And what has he done? He's set in his tent, afraid to go out and fight. And so what God is going to do in this moment, he's going to send somebody that's willing to fight the battle. Saul's done nothing in fear, so God's about to send somebody on the scene that isn't afraid. And all this time while this is happening, where's David? David is with his dad, shepherding the flock of sheep, because his older brothers were away on the encamped with the rest of the Israelite army. And so when David goes and he goes to the encampment, David's dad asks him, hey, go check on your brothers and take them some food. He arrives at the encampment and he sees all of this happening before him. People are hiding. Nobody's wanting to go out and face this Goliath, this dude that's just taunting them and throwing insults across the valley. And David is shocked because these are supposed to be the fighting men. These are supposed to be the brave warriors to represent Israel. David is in disbelief. And so we're going to pick up in chapter 17, verse 26. David asked the soldier standing nearby, what will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is the pagan Philistine anyway that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God? Just before that, he had been asking around, hey, what's the prize here? And a couple of guys said, hey, if somebody kills Goliath, they get a daughter of the king as a wife, and their family is exempt from taxes. And I'm like, man, I get an amen. Like, send me out, right? And so David is kind of like, are you sure? Like, he's kind of asking this question, like, what will they get again? Did I hear that right? And so all these men gave David the same reply, saying, yes, that's the reward for killing him. But when David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. What are you doing around here anyway, he demanded. What about these few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle. And David said, what have I done now? I was only asking a question. He walked over some others and asked the same thing and received the same answer. And then King Saul heard about the question that David was asking and had David brought to him. Some people get hung up right here, but I like because of David's brother's response to him. Well, and you would think maybe was David not a good guy? Like David had a heart like after God. David was a guy after God's own heart, you know? And so what's going on? Well, also remember that just several chapters earlier, David's older brothers were at the house when Samuel came and anointed him as king. And so they all stood and they watched the most unsuspecting brother be anointed king when there were better candidates for it standing in the line of brothers. And so I think he's probably just a little bit bitter about the fact that his brother is going to be king, and he's still just taking it out a little bit. And so when David comes before Saul tries, he assures Saul first that, hey, we're going to defeat this guy. I'm going to go out and do it. Nobody talks to my people like that. Nobody talks about my God like that. I'm going to go out and I'm going to take care of it. And so what does Saul do? Saul tries to outfit him in his own armor and his own stuff. But David realized that he could not go out and he could not fight Saul dressed like somebody else. I think I skipped ahead a little bit, but that's okay. Hang with me. All right, so we're going to pick up in 34, verse 34. It says this, but David persisted. I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I have done this to both lions and bears, and I will do it to this pagan Philistine too. For he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine as well. And so this is kind of like a response to Saul being in hiding and terrified and afraid. He's like, hey, Saul, guess what I've been doing? I've been shepherding my flock of sheep, and I go after bears, and I go after lions. What are you doing, Saul? You're hiding in a tent. You're hiding in a tent. And so this is where Saul tries to fit him in his own armor. And David says, no, I don't think so. I'm going to just go ahead and take my staff, my rocks, and my sling, and I'm going to go out and face Goliath. Let's pick up right here. This is the last chunk. Goliath walked out towards David. This is verse 41. With his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. Am I a dog, he roared at David, that you come at me with a stick? And he cursed David by the names of his gods. Come over here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals, Goliath yelled. David replied to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. Come on, somebody. All right. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and the wild animals. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. As Goliath moved closer to attack, David ran out to meet him, reaching into his shepherd's bag, taking out the stone. He hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. But he was about to. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword out from its sheath. And David used it to kill him and cut off his head. Yeah, that's some stuff right there, right? That's some pictures. Yeah, it's wild. David wasn't playing games, guys. He meant every word he said, and he delivered on it. Again, it isn't a sword and a spear that David used. It was a sling and a rock that David used. I was reading a commentary the other day about this passage of scripture, and what was interesting, it was something that was pointed out in that commentary that I had never really thought of before. A lot of people, they read the story and they focus on the three main characters of this story, like the three people that are in the story. But what he was saying is we might miss the significance of the thing that was used to bring the giant down, which is the rock. The rock was what was used to bring the giant down. We miss it. So what's the rock? What's the rock? What does it represent? Well, it's not Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, that's not who we're talking about. Although sometimes I wish I looked more like him. But that's not who we're talking about, right? It's not even like some of you ultra spiritual, like the Rock of Ages. That's who you're talking about. Nobody gets that in here. Okay. So that's not who we're talking about either. Not in this context. Not really. Let me kind of illustrate what I mean, because the rock really is about your giftings, your talents, your passions, your dreams, your opportunities. What do I mean by that? Okay, this is an awesome nugget for you to get. You see, Saul was the first king of Israel, and God did not actually want to give Israel a king. He wanted to be the king, right? He wanted the people to depend on him, right? He loved them. He wanted them to depend on him, but they persisted, right? It's like sometimes it's the nagging that wins, right? And nobody knows that in here either. But like they persisted, and so God gave them what they wanted, and they got a king. And it was a king that looked like a king. Like he was tall, dark, and handsome, kind of also like me. I'm just kidding. I'm not dark because I'm about the same color as my shirt. But he gave them somebody that looked like a king. However, he didn't have the character of a king. And that was a big problem. The other thing about Saul that's important to know is that Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. And the tribe of Benjamin had some really awesome fighting men in it. However, like if you were to equate their style of fighting, it would be like small arms combat tactics, similar to like maybe like Navy SEALs or like the Army Rangers, they go in kind of covertly and they'd take out the enemy and nobody would even know until they wake up the next morning, they're all dead, right? Like that's the kind of fighting style that they use. Small arms, hand-to-hand combat, and then also they were expert slingers. They would take a rock, they'd whip it, and they'd hit it right on a dot. Like, they were the expert slingers. David would have known that about Saul. David would have known that Saul was probably a better slinger than him. And the thing about it is that while Saul was probably the expert slinger, Saul was not willing to use the sling that he had. Because it's also probably okay to assume that Saul's traditional warfare garb probably was outfitted with a sling. He could have literally had a slingshot hooked into his clothing and a bag that would carry stones, but he didn't use it. He didn't use it. Even though he was the best, he still didn't use it. So with the rest of our time, I'm going to talk about three things to consider when it comes to the rock. Three things. If the rock represents opportunities, giftings, talents, passions, callings, dreams, or purpose, the first thing that we have to consider is this. We all have a rock. We all have a rock. This is what I want you to do. You have rocks, right? You have a physical rock, each of you. I want you to look at it. You don't have to pick it up, all right? We're going to do this in steps here. Don't get excited about the last step, all right? But we're going to do this in steps here. Just look at the rock. Acknowledge the rock that has been given to you, all right? Just look at it. You all have a rock, not just in physical form in this room, but spiritually, each one of you has been outfitted with a rock. You all have been given a gift. You've all been given an opportunity. You all have been given a calling. You all have been given a purpose. And while each of you have been gifted with something, it doesn't look the same as somebody else's. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10 says this, God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. Romans chapter 12 talks about how different your gift is from somebody else's. It says, in his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you're a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage, be encouraging. If it's giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. Like I said before, Saul probably could sling a rock with the best of them. But David would have definitely known that Benjamin warriors equals perfect slingers. And David equals somebody that has done it as a shepherd and got pretty good at it. That was the extent of his proficiency of slinging a rock. He would have known that Saul would have been better. But what would have happened if David would have begun that comparison spiral that you and I like to go through in our life, where we start comparing the things that, the giftings that we have with somebody else's giftings and how that person looks probably like better fit for the job, or like maybe the thing that I do isn't as good as the thing that somebody else does. And we start to spiral down this thing. What would have happened? We would have probably been reading a story called Saul and the Philistine giant that now rules over Israel instead of David and Goliath, right? Our lives look a whole lot different because we compare our rock to somebody else's rock. None of your rocks look the same, right? None of them look the same. I'll say it like this. If you're taking notes, you could write this down. Comparison is the self-dequalifier of God's purpose realized in our life. Because I think sometimes we think that other people think the same story that we're telling ourselves is true. But can I tell you something? Nobody cares. Nobody's thinking that. They're worrying about their rock and somebody else's rock, comparing all their stuff. Nobody's thinking that. You know where you're thinking that? You're thinking that in your head. God has gifted you with something for you to do. I'll say it like this. Your rock will get the job done that God has for your life. Your rock that God has given you will get the job done for your life. That is the truth. Quit comparing your rock to somebody else's. We all have a rock, and it's all meant for us specifically. All right, second thing to consider, talking about your rock, is you gotta pick up your rock. Okay, now you can pick up your rock. Pick up your rock. You can hold it in your hand if you're taking notes. Maybe like put it in your lap or something. David had other options to fight Goliath with. He had other opportunities. Saul actually tried to share those other options, those other weapons. He tried to share those with David. But David knew that the only way he was going to successfully defeat this giant was if he actually picked up his rock that was purposed for him to use. Little side note here that I think is important to add is some of us are really so desperate to see our dream or our idea or our impact come to pass that we tie ourselves to someone else's armor or weaponry that we aren't meant to pick up. That we try to tie ourselves to somebody else's rock or somebody else's weaponry that doesn't fit us. God has something different specifically for you that you don't have to tie or use of anybody else's. He has something specific for you to use. So just pick up your own rock. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 40 says, he picked up five, what's the next word? Smooth. We'll say it again. Better participation, okay? He picked up five. That was really good. All right. Picked up five smooth stones from a stream and put them into his shepherd's bag. Then armed only with his staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. I know this might be silly. This might be a silly English lesson. But what is the word smooth? It's a describing word, right? And what are describing words called? Adjectives. Very good class. They're adjectives. Right? And so we've got to start figuring out. Some of you already know this. Some of you, the moment I started comparing the rock to your giftings and your opportunities and your talents and your calling and your purpose, you already know exactly what that is. Some of you, like, you've never thought about it like this. And you need to start thinking about, hey, what's my rock? Because God's given you a rock. You have to start putting a name to your rock a little bit. What's the rock you're picking up? What's the gift? Maybe it's a dream. What's the purpose or the call? What's the rock that God's placed before you to pick up, place in your bag, and to go face the world that he has you living in? Because we each have one. And we need to each pick up our own rock and then go out and face the world that he has for us to face. And then once you pick up that rock, what's the next thing that you do? Okay, like three people got it. All right, what's the next thing you do? The third thing you do is you throw the rock. You throw the rock. Now, I'm not saying you're going to pick up this rock and throw it at me. Okay, these things hurt. All right, Goliath is a prime example. All right, I'm not saying that. In a second, we're going to do it symbolically, though. We're going to do something symbolically that'll allow you to throw your rock. But there's two things when we talk about throwing a rock, there's two little sub-points that I think are important for you to know and for you to understand. The first is this, that usually your rock is meant to oppose adversity or our adversary. Your rock is meant to. It's not oftentimes, it's not usually. I'm just going to tell you, straight up. Your rock, your gifting, the things that God has called you and purposed you for are meant to oppose adverse situations and your adversary, all right? Now, I know we didn't talk about it like this when we read through the description of Goliath, but I do want to point a couple things out about Goliath, and we're going to look at those together. Look how Goliath is described, all right? He's described like this, bronze coat of mail, which some translations would say would be scale-like armor. I don't know if your Bible says it like that. Some of them do. Scale-like armor. How tall was he? 6 cubits tall, okay? Remember, numbers are important too in the Bible. The iron-tipped spearhead weighed, some of your translations map it out like this, 600 shekels, right? And then if you read in the book of Chronicles, Chronicles lays out that Goliath had a brother who had 6 fingers on his hands and 6 toes on his feet, okay? So you have scale-like armor, you have 600 shekels, you have 6 fingers, 6 toes. You had, what was the other one? 6 cubit feet tall. 6 cubits tall. Sorry, my bad. So what is that? I think it's up here on the screen. 666 with scales. Bro, okay. Now, I'm not trying to be weird, but I do know that numbers are important. And could it be that maybe the author was trying to paint a picture for us that David went out to face his adversary, and maybe we should start looking at our adversary a little bit more seriously, right? That our rock is meant to be thrown at our chief adversary, which is who? Satan. Because there's another, because in Genesis, who also had scales that crawled around on the ground? The serpent, right? Could it be that the author was trying to paint the picture that, hey, your stone that you have, reader, is meant to be thrown at your adversary, your chief adversary, Satan. And you oppose him of that. That's good. That's good. That's good stuff. It gave me goosebumps. Okay, anyhow. So it's important when things are tough, stay strong. When it's chaotic, hold fast. When you get fearful, stay faithful. Because the second thing to consider about throwing your rock is this. When it's time to throw your rock, you'll have to have resolve. When it's time to throw your rock, you'll have to have resolve. See, the difference between Saul and David was that Saul was too scared to get out of his tent to go fight Goliath, even though he should have been the one, leadership-wise and skill-wise with the sling, to go fight Goliath. He should have been the one. But he was too scared to do it, while David shouldn't have been the one walking out into the valley to face Goliath. At least he was willing to do it. Maybe we could say it like this. In other words, David had resolve and Saul just dissolved. David had resolve, but Saul just dissolved when it came time to face the giant, to face the adversary. The other thing that David knew is this. That God can do more with a rock in the air than a rock that's laying in the bed of a stream or sitting in your pocket. Man, God is, this room is full of dreams. It's full of talents. It's full of giftings. It's full of opportunities. And I can't help but stand in front of a room like this and think, how many of us are just carrying the rock in the pocket? How many of us have delayed picking the rock up altogether, and we've just let it lay in the riverbed? Your rock is too important to let it just sit in your pocket. God can't use a rock that sits in your pocket. But man, he can sure use a rock that's in the air. If you know what your rock is, then you got to start throwing it. Because you're here on this earth to throw your rock, and it doesn't matter how gifted you are. It doesn't matter how much potential impact God's placed in you. It doesn't matter how talented you are. It doesn't matter how incredible the call of God is on your life, or how big the dream is that he's placed in your heart. It doesn't matter. Because if you're not willing to throw the rock, God can't put it to use. And there's going to be times, I said earlier, like comparison will creep into your head, or any other thing that you might face that might cause you to question whether you should be throwing a rock. But you know, we face an adversary that likes to attack our minds, likes to try to get us to believe things about ourselves that aren't true, lies that will hold us back, place situations in our life to maybe get us to stumble a little bit. And why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he do that? This is my challenge to you, and this is probably, if there's nothing else you take away from this morning, this is the one thing I want you to take away. When the enemy comes after you, because he will, when you go to throw your rock, he absolutely will, you just remind him that your rock is meant for his head. You just remind him that your rock is meant for his head. So you have your rock in your hand, right? And worship team, you can come out. Just a second, we're going to respond by symbolically throwing a rock. Okay? So this is what I need for you to do. If you could stand to your feet. Some of you might be standing in here today and you might think to yourself, like I said earlier, you know exactly what that is. Some of you, you may be a little less clear about what your rock is, what your purpose is, what are the talents and the giftings that you might have, God might have for you. We have this thing, it was talked about during the Crossroads News. It's called Growth Track. And there's this really awesome opportunity for you to go through Growth Track. And when you go through Growth Track, there's a week in Growth Track where literally you take a spiritual gift assessment. And by answering some questions, we're able to kind of help you determine what might be some possibilities that God's gifted you spiritually in. And also on top of that, man, there's an awesome personality test that also you can take in order to find out maybe how God's given you a personality that might come that might support those giftings. There's opportunities for you to find out what you're right. So if you haven't been to Growth Track yet, don't wait. Sign up. Get there. Next month starts first Sunday of the month, session number one. Go to Growth Track. For those of you in the room, I believe this can happen too right now. And second, we're going to pray that God will reveal what the rock is in our life. What it is that is our rock. So that we can go out and we can throw it. And so after I pray, there are Sharpie stations all across. Like there's some up here. There's some in the back behind the chairs over here where the communion was. Up at the top too, there's some up there over here by the sound booth. Got Sharpie stations all over the place because, listen, I'm a youth pastor at heart. I'm still actually a youth pastor. Yeah. So, but it's just hard. It's hard for me not to do these things. I want us to put some action to this. And I want you to grab a Sharpie in just a minute. And I want you to have a time between you and Jesus where you allow him to speak to you. Maybe he needs to remind you what your rock is. Maybe you already know what it is. Maybe you need to ask him what your rock is. But I want you to write that down. Maybe it's one word, two words, maybe a short phrase. And I want you to keep this rock, put it somewhere where it's reminding you every single day what your rock is. Okay, we're going to do that. The worship team is going to come. They're going to sing a portion of this song. Don't leave yet. We're almost done. I promise I won't keep you long. But don't leave yet because we're going to pray together and we're going to give our rocks to God together before we all leave, okay? All right, worship team. Heavenly Father, I thank you that you have given each of us a purpose. And maybe in this moment right now, Holy Spirit, you would speak to us, maybe even just a still small voice, a reminder of the rock, the purpose, the gifting, the calling that you've placed inside of every single one of us. You have purpose for each of us in this room. Remind us of what that is. Speak to us as we go and we find a Sharpie to write that down on our rock so that we can step into action and throw it to defeat the enemy in the world that you've given us to face. Go ahead, find a Sharpie. Let's spend some time throwing our rock together.